Welcome back to the Rude Dude Podcast. It is I, Cameron the Cree Davis, here with a very special episode. But as we can tell, I am by myself. We don't have Henry hitting the intro. He has softball playoffs. Hopefully they come through with a win. It's funny, we talked about how the schedule was changing and yada yada yada, and then he hits me today saying, nope, I got softball playoffs today. I was like, oh, fantastic. So the ever elusive can I get Cameron and Henry together mystery continues. But this will not be a Cameron exclusive episode, so you guys are in for a treat. So please don't run away right away. So you'll be like, oh my God, dude, I got to sit here and listen to fucking Cameron talk by himself again. I mean, Jesus criminy sakes. That's not what's going on today. I have a very special guest. One of my cousins, like I've talked about on here, I come from a long line of addicts, alcoholics, in particularly on my mother's side, which is a humongous family, but we'll probably get into that a little bit more in this episode. But I am going to be sitting here with my cousin David, who is an awesome dude, has really turned his life around and has quite a story to tell. So without further ado, let me introduce my cousin David Fuchs.
Hey, how you guys doing?
David, what's up, bro? How you doing today, man?
Oh, I'm loving life, bro. I'm loving life, man. Things are coming together.
Yeah, man. Hey, I gotta be completely honest with you, and we're just gonna go right out the fucking gate. And I hope you don't take offense to this, but bro, you look a hell of a lot better than the last time I fucking saw you up there at Progress House, brother.
Yeah, I guarantee that, bro.
Dude, I gotta be honest, man. I was worried that day, bro. Like that was a rough day because I couldn't get you in. Because you were loaded and man, I mean, you were fucked off, bro. And I was just like, dude, I hope he fucking makes it, man. I walked out of there that day and I was like, bro, I tried my best. I want you to know that I did my best for you that day, dude.
Right. No, absolutely, bro. And absolutely. And, you know, and that's the thing, man, is like, there's nothing special about me, bro. I'm just a bottom of the barrel junkie alcoholic, bro. And, you know, it's crazy what can happen though, what recovery can do for someone, because that's who I was, man. And that's who I started for years to just identify as, man. And it turned me into an animal, man. And that's how I was living. You know, it took me from a normal life to everything abnormal. And just, I couldn't not get loaded, you know?
Yeah. No, I get it, bro. And it's funny how you mention that's how I identified, right? Like I had fully accepted that, you know, like, hey, I was an alcoholic and this was just who I was, bro. You know what I mean? Like, it was like a part of me. And in turn, I guess it still is, right? Like, if I go and I pick up a fucking bottle of booze today, like, surprise everybody, you know, the 6 years of sobriety that I got right now goes away and that guy comes back. Let's jump into it, man. Give us a little rundown about who you are, how old you are, where you're from, and
I'm 36. I was born back in 88 and from Northern California, from Auburn area. And, you know, just like typical, you know, childhood, actually. Let's see here. You know, I, like you were saying, Karen, we from your mother's side, but this is from my dad's side. Obviously, your mother is my aunt. So my our parents are siblings. So, anyways, big family on the dad's side, but really small on my mom's side, but, very tight knit, you know, grew up in a good home. And, you know, my dad was in recovery when I was born. So, you know, my early childhood was totally normal, man, you know, had, played baseball and, but I'll tell you this though, man, ever since I was a child though, dude, I always felt a little different, bro. I felt like I couldn't fit in with people, you know? Mm-hmm. And, that's something that later on, once I discovered, and it started with alcohol, man, is that when I had my first drink, I was 12 years old. I had my first drink, man. And, got like blacked out on peppermint schnapps, you know, at some Jewish guy's bar mitzvah. You know, it's falling down in the snow, kind of drunk, you know. But I remember, man, what that effect gave to me, dude, is that it all of a sudden I could, you know, talk to the people that were there, and especially the girls that I wanted to talk to, you know.
Exactly. Dude, that's, you know, when I sit and I talk around with people now, I think the craziest thing is that I've actually gotten like more reserved in my sobriety, right? And I actually learned something about myself in these years that it was like, I'm not as outgoing as I thought I was. It was the booze that made me that outgoing person. You know what I mean, dude? Like, yeah. And so I get what you're saying, man. So started with alcohol. I do gotta hammer home on this. Like, so your dad's been sober a long time. Yeah. How long has he been sober?
Yeah. He's got 19 years, I believe.
Yeah. 19. Yeah. Yeah. That's good on him, bro. Good on him, dude. We love to see that. So we started with booze. Booze was the first thing. I imagine we jumped right in and started, you know, smoking weed and shit like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I jumped, man, you know, and that's the thing is because of the effect of what alcohol did for me, man, I became enthralled with all things intoxicants, you know, and that was from 12 on, you know, and, long story short, you know, I only have a seventh grade education, man. I dropped out of school in the seventh grade, and just some things that were going on at home, I was able to get away with that and not go to school, man. And so I just pursued that. I always hung out with a little bit of older crowd, you know, a bunch of people that had kind of just dropped out, like burnouts or whatever you want to call them, you know, dirt bags or whatever. And so I just started running with those crowds, and I had that ability to do so, man, you know. Because my dad ended up, you know, back then it ended up going back to prison to do another term, man. So I kind of just had free reign, man. And it did. It quickly led to obviously marijuana and then methamphetamine. And then, I ran on meth, dude, hard from like 16 years old, man, until I got clean. But the meth started very, very young, man. And then opiates, you know, right after, because, you know, you go so high, but you got to come down. And then I fell in love with both of them, and
yeah,
it's just crazy,
dude. So you think it was the catalyst of your dad having to go back to the big house that kind of like, you know, took away that structure, and maybe, or do you think that you probably would have just still fucking ended up in that path? I guess we'll never know, you know, right?
I guess. Yeah, I know. Right. You know, I think that, you know, because he had his relapse, right? So the house got kind of crazy, man, as a kid, dude. It got kind of nuts, dude. And the craziest thing, dude, is I actually like had a hatred towards alcohol because I seen what it did to people that I cared about, you know. And anyways, it just, but then once I finally tried it, though, man, it was like, oh, this is what it's all about. But I think that, you know, whether we're born with it, man, or it's in our genes, they say, you know, some people are under the assumption that it's passed down. So, you know, and I'm not quite sure about this, though, man, but I know that if we, whether it's an alcoholic gene or what it is, man, but I know that once we put in, though, it we developed that phenomenon craving, and it just, and I've tried this for years and years, man, to get right. And as soon as I put in, man, it starts it all over again.
Yeah, dude. It is genetic. It is genetic. So it's like, there's this predisposition gene, and we got it on our side, bro. It's like set in stone. Like I've mentioned it on here. Like I pray to God, man, that like none of my kids have the demon blood, as I call it. You know what I mean? Cause like, dude, it's just wild. And especially, you know, dude, it's taken out a lot of our family members. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, and it's a sad way to go, bro. It's a sad way to go. So dude, we started doing meth at 16, bro. That's fucking, that's extreme, dog. When did you start? How'd you start doing that? Were you just like smoking it, snorting it? What were you doing? Doing it all? Doing all the shit?
You know what? No, and that's the craziest thing, dude. The first time I ever tried meth was IV, dude, at 16.
Oh.
And yeah, dude. And so that just like catapulted me, dude. Like, you know, I don't know if there's any listeners out there that were, you know, IV users, man, but
yeah, we've had when, a lot.
You know, man, a 16-year-old body, dude, putting a large dose like that in your veins, man, it just totally spun the top off my head, you know? And then that became, and then, you know, I tried to do it other ways, man, but that was the only way that would do it for me.
Okay. I'm curious, bro. I'm just curious. What's that like? Not that I want to do meth or anything like that. I'm not trying to like trigger you or anything, but there has to be a fucking appeal to it, bro, because you see so many people who are fucking addicted to it, right? Like what is the main appeal of it? Like if you could give one thing.
Oh man, I would just say, dude, it's probably the most incredible feeling as far as the full body, just euphoria. And, it turns any girl into a freak, you know what I mean? And it's just like, it's just like, and you know what I mean? And you just are gonzo, dude. And it, you know, but then the thing is though, man, the flip side of it is it requires more and more injections, man, as time goes, you know? And then that becomes the only way, you know?
Yeah, dude. Yeah. That's what you see, dude, is like all of a sudden then you got like the psychosis kicking in and all that type of shit. So we jumped in, you started doing fucking speedballs is what it hears. What I can tell, doing heroin and meth. Any sort of jail or anything in between in that time?
So somehow, man, I don't know how I was able to avoid any incarceration like in my earlier years, man. That was just by pure dumb luck, dude. You know what I mean? Just because I really don't know, dude. I don't know how. No, not as like a juvenile, but, you know, of course, my 20s and 30s are riddled with incarceration times, you know. But, yeah, I was able to avoid any type of arrest, dude, until I was like 21, you know, which for active users when you're young, that's like unheard of, you know.
Yeah. So we're running and gunning. We're fucking, you know, now let's say we'll fast forward 20s. You're in and out of jail, shit like that. Is there ever a point where, you know, say like the family reaches out and offers to get you help? Or, I mean, was there any sort of olive branch reached out and you just weren't ready for it?
And you know what? Well, I'll tell you this is that I knew it was a problem with me, man, from when I was a kid. And so, in my 20s, absolutely, man, there's so many, relationships, bosses, people that were like, man, David, you're a good guy, dude, but you're off the hook, dude. And you're just, you know what I mean? It was, people, you know, a fiance that I lost from it, just situations, absolutely, family members, people saying like, you know, you need help, man, you need help. And situations even where family members got me arrested because that seemed like the only way to get me help, man, you know? And cause that's the thing, dude, I didn't think I could, man, because I didn't feel, anytime I was clean and sober, man, I felt like I got worse mentally, if that makes sense, man. Okay. I was miserable sober and clean.
Yeah, dude, that's actually something, dude, that I'm gonna reiterate, bro. I think that is the number one fucking reason why all of us in the addict alcoholic community use is because, dude, we literally cannot tolerate what's going on between these two ears, right? Like I don't know. Yeah, I imagine you probably suffer from anxiety and depression like everybody else in our fucking family, right? But dude, like that is yeah, that comes with it too. Yeah, we're a bunch of fucking alcoholics, drug addicts, and fucking anxious, depressed fucks, dude.
right,
dude. It's all adding up. But yeah, we're great people, right? But like, right, dude. Right. I ran away from the thoughts in my mind for fucking years, bro, because I didn't want to have to feel or think about how I felt about how I was thinking, if that makes any sense, right? Like, I couldn't have it. So that helped, that kept me in active addiction for a long ass time, bro. A long time. I mean, it can't go understated how there's a mental health aspect to this. There's more to it than just, hey, I'm physically addicted to this substance. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And this is the thing too, is that, you know, I first came into the rooms of recovery. It was kind of like what you call, I guess, a nudge from the judge, you know, like I never willingly went into any type of AA or NA because I thought it would be good for me. It was always court ordered. Right. And the thing is, I would go in there, man, and I would see these people laughing and smiling. And I'm like, you know, what the hell is wrong with you people, man? Like, either this is a cult or y'all are, you know, it's, you know, I didn't know what it was, man. And that was my misconception, because I thought there is no way you can feel and have that kind of joy and really be clean and sober. you know?
Yeah, dude. Sorry to interrupt, bro. I thought I was fucking, I got my first book when I was like 21, 20. Right. And then one of my bosses took me to a meeting and I remember just walking in with that same feeling, bro. Like, what the fuck are you guys so happy about? And then second off, I heard some stories because I hadn't accomplished all my awesome life goals yet, like get arrested and fuck shit up. I was like, bro, I'm not as bad as these motherfuckers. You know what I mean? I was like, no, dude. And you know, people in the rooms who are listening to this and people in recovery be like, well, yeah, of course, we all kind of felt that way in the beginning. But I swear to God, man, I remember sitting around listening to some guy who was telling a story about, you know, I forget what it was, you know, some crazy shit that we hear in the rooms. Right. I'm like, well, fuck, dude, that hasn't happened to me. So I still got, according to my logic, I still got like 10 years of drinking left. So this ain't for me, bro. You know what I mean?
Right, bro. Hey, dude. And you know what? I absolutely understand that, man. And you know what? I'll tell you this. And that's why anytime I'm a grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. And I anytime that I share, I'm big on not giving a war story, bro, because of that reason, dude, because I know for a fact, dude, there might be someone in that room that hears the crazy shit I was doing, like, you know, butt naked up on a roof doing some weirdo shit, right? All this crazy stuff. You know what I mean? That's just like one little side story, but like, and then they might go, well, you know, I haven't done that yet, so maybe I'm not bad. And then they might go out and end up fucking killing themselves. Excuse my language. End up killing themselves, man. Exactly. You know? Exactly. And that's why I don't like war stories, man. It's like, we all got them, bro. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, man. if you're walking in the fucking rooms, bro, you got a war story, right? We all got 500 right. of them. We all got 500 right. of them. And right. dude, hats off to you for having the fucking mental cognizant or the mental cognition to recognize that, bro, because dude, that literally kept me out of the rooms. Literally kept me out of the rooms. Could have probably turned my whole fucking life around. I believe everything happens for a reason, and I got sober when I got sober by the grace of God, but like maybe it looked different if I didn't walk in and hear people talking about their crazy ass shit. You know what I mean?
Right. And you know, it, yeah, absolutely, dude. And I feel like we all have, not everyone's bottom is the same, man. Like, you know, some people's bottom, they still have the house and the wife and the kids, and they're not, you know, like living in a tent like I was, like a freaking animal, dude. Like, you know what I mean? So people, they can, the program works, bro. I mean, I'm standing member, bro, that the 12 steps has absolutely changed my life, bro. And it's and it can do that for anyone. It's but we've, you know, we feel like we're terminally unique, man. And I know that, and I'm speaking from experience, and it's easy to pick apart the things that we see and we go, well, that can't work for me, you know.
Yeah. So hey, I stand with you in solidarity, bro. If it wasn't for fucking 12 steps, bro, you and I aren't having this conversation, big dog. You know what I mean? Like straight the fuck up. So I'm trying to preach, we do, like, hey, everybody has a different way of recovery, but I just don't see any other way outside of the 12 steps, to be fucking honest with you. A lot of people like to get all upset about it because they had a bad experience. Well, you just went to the wrong room, in my opinion. But so let's get back to your story, dude. We were running gunning, yada yada yada. When was bottom, bro? When was bottom? What did that look like? What did that look like?
Man, I'll tell you what, bro. I'll tell you what, you know, and that's crazy you asked that, because, you know, I thought, you know, I overdosed on, God, I hope my mom doesn't hear this because I don't want to break her heart. But, you know, like for the last few years that I was out there, man, I was like overdosing every 2 weeks. You know, I had people that were Narcanning me. Just, it was insane, bro. Like I was on a one-way mission. And you think that first overdose when you're being woken up and they're loading you onto a, you know, a stretcher, and they just gave you IV Narcan to wake you up. And you would think that would be my bottom, dude. But I'm just thinking about how am I going to get out of this gurney so I can go back and do another fix, because I'm already sick from the Narcan they just gave me and I'm already in withdrawal, you know. And that, you would think, bro, that would be a bottom, right? And or when I'm in the hospital, right, and I had a GI bleed, dude, because I had a esophageal bleed in my throat, where most people die from that, bro, because of my alcoholism, right? I mean, I was like throwing up straight blood, dude, and I was in ICU. They had to give me blood transfusions. But the only thing I was thinking about was, how can I get more dilaudid from this doctor, and when am I going to leave so I can go get another drink, even though that's the reason why I was in there, you know? So those weren't even my bottoms, man. And that's what it's like. How much farther can you go down, right? And I'll tell you, for me, bro, what it was I was really back in October of 2021, I was really bad, man. And I was suicidal, and I was in a horrible way, Cameron. I was not good, man. And I just had an absolute death wish, dude. And I felt like there was no way out, man. And I was in my, you know, mid 30s. I'm living in a tent, homeless, got some of my teeth knocked out. I'm just, nobody wanted to speak to me, bro. Nobody wanted nothing to do with me. And I was a thief and a user, bro, a user of people. And by the grace of God, dude, I remember just digging in my arms for like 2 hours with a needle, trying to find a vein, dude, because I couldn't fix. And I remember just like, I was crying, bro. And I remember asking God for help, dude, during that. And it almost makes me emotional not talking about it, man, but I was so, so hurt, dude, and just broken. And within about 4 hours, dude, I got arrested for some stuff that the cops had been looking for my tweaking ass for a while on, you know. And so they, my bottom came in the form of handcuffs, bro. You know, like for the 10th time in handcuffs, you know. And I ended up going have to do 18 months over that, bro.
Okay.
And that term that I did, it even though it wasn't that long, man, 18 months isn't a terrible long time, but it was a long enough time for me to be separated from alcohol and from opioids and from meth. And I'm a true believer that if I would have only done a few days or a month, I'd be dead right now, bro, because as soon as I hit the gate, I'd be right back to doing what I'm doing, man. But I really had that time, dude, to not only just think about what I'm going to do, but the program that came into the facility, you know, H&I came into the correctional facility, man, and reached out to me and shared some hope with me, man, and that I could get out and never go back to that life again.
Hell yeah, bro. Hell yeah. That's some powerful shit, dude. First and foremost, let me just say, like, I'm sorry that it got so bad, dude. You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, for the normies that listen, like when you sit here and you talk about, you know, like your experiences, like, hey, yeah, I've overdosed 5,000 times. Like, dude, this shit is wild to people who don't understand. Right. Like, it's just like, what do you mean that wasn't bottom? Well, it wasn't. I have some friends like that. Right. Like where it's like, bro, overdosing, choking on vomit, almost dying, yada, yada, back at it the next day. You know what I mean? Like, and if you don't understand, you don't understand. But dude, that sounds like there's like some divine intervention, right? It's weird how it happens. It's weird how it happens like that. And you painted a really good picture of the desperation there at the end, right? Like sitting there, I feel like I could see that. You know what I mean? Like you're in a tent, you can't get a fucking vein, you're crying, you just want to die. Because this is no way to fucking live, you know, newsflash, this is misery. newsflash, this is absolute hell, bro. Like not having a good time. And then you get rolled, bro. And, you know, thank God that you had the foresight to go, hey, all right, I think enough is enough, dude. You know, like we have a great friend of the show who got sober because of incarceration and is living his fucking best life now. You know what I mean? Like that's dude, right, doing the most. So when you were in there, you a light bulb flicked on, I imagine, right?
Oh yeah. You know, and that's the thing is too, is because, you know, as I'm going through the judicial process of, you know, arraignment and all that stuff, I remember asking one of the officers, does it look like I'm getting out? And he just started laughing. You know, he's like, hell no, dude, you got like 17 felonies, dude. What the fuck are you talking about, bro? Yeah. And I'm like, I'm standing there with like, missing teeth and shit. I'm like, what? You know, and, you know, I'm thinking I'm going to get OR'd or something. Yeah, right, bro. But so, you know, and once I got sentenced, man, and I knew, and that time was given to me, right? And they're like, you have a 5-year term, dude. Boom, 5 years, right? And so I really had that time, man, to go, okay, so this is it, dude. This is it. I'm looking at my life patterns, right? And I can still remember it clearly, dude. I can still smell that jail, bro, sitting there thinking about, okay, so now I'm going to get shipped off. I got to do this time. And what am I going to do, man? What am I going to do? Because I've been in this situation so many times before, sitting incarcerated, bro. Just, you know, going, what am I going to do? You know? And I didn't, thank God for my mother, dude, and my dad, that, and my sisters and brothers, man, that, showed me support in there and gave me that encouragement that, man, you know, you can do this, David. You can live that life that we know you can live. It's just, you know, you just got to do it. But I mean, I can hear their apprehension in their voice too, man, because they've, and I can't blame them from this, but I imagine they just assume this is another runaround with, you know, this is just David doing what David does. Yeah. And, but yeah, that light bulb did go off, man. I there were some guys that came in carrying in the message of recovery. And I, you know, and what stuck with me is, why are these guys coming in and doing this? You know, they're not getting paid to do this. And they shared their experience, strength, and hope with me, man. And I became to rely on those meetings, man, because it was that, because it's crazy when you're locked up, the stuff that goes on in there, it's off the hook, bro. And it's just like, that was that hour, dude, I had of, figuring out a way that I didn't ever have to come back there again, you know, and I could actually change my life, man.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, that's it, man. And thank God for that program, right? Like the H&I coming through there, right? Like a lot of people will use that just to get out of their cells, I hear. But like, bro, like you getting it and the message hitting you, bro, saved your fucking life, dude. That's super heartwarming, bro. Like I'm so fucking, I hate that you had to go through everything that you went through, but I'm so fucking happy for you, bro. I'm so fucking happy for you, bro, because I swear to God, man, aside from seeing the fucking Facebook pictures of you, you know, doing so well these days, I still had that fucking, like I said at the beginning, I still had that vision of you, like fucking the last time I saw you, bro. And it made me so fucking sad. So seeing you on this side, dude, is fucking amazing. So
yeah.
Let's go into this now. So we get out of prison. I imagine, maybe we're a little nervous about that. Were you scared about getting out a little bit?
Yeah. Oh man, I can't tell you. Oh yeah. And that's another thing. So I hadn't mentioned yet. So this is the deal, is that when, you know, when you're getting closer to getting out, man, you know, people start asking you like, oh, when are you hitting the gate? And the thing is, normally I'd always be excited, man, about getting out. But dude, I was scared, bro. I was scared because I was like, I've never had 18 months clean since I was 15 years old, and I'm 35 at the time. Right. Yeah. And I'm going, and I knew what I needed to do that would make it work. But I was so afraid that once I got out, and I, because that's the thing with me, Cameron, if I'm in a locked facility, I can stay clean. You know, yep. There's nothing there, but you know, left to my own devices, that's a whole nother story. All of a sudden I'm jumping out of a window if I need to, you know? And so I was scared, man. I was like, God, dude, I almost was like, man, can y'all just throw away the key? You know, because at least in here, dude, I'll be all right, man. And I'll be safe. And that might sound crazy to other people too, man. But that literally was like a comfort for me, man. Cause I knew I was okay. And I knew I'd be sober in there. And so I hit up the substance abuse counselor that worked in the facility, man, in their Department of Corrections. And so, and I pleaded with her, man, please get me into a program, you know. And she, and I'll never forget this. She was like, David, you know, you're getting, you know, cause I got an early release after 18 months. Right. She goes, David, you just did 18 months, right? You're getting out in the next 2 weeks. Why do you need a program? Like, you have 18 months away. Getting you into a program now seems like it would be a waste of county funding. And, you know, we've already sent you, Placer County had already sent me, dude, to probably 9 programs. Yeah, you know, I won't mention their names on here, but yeah, they bounced me all around, dude, all the rehabs in Auburn and Grass Valley and all this stuff like that, and Sacramento. And they just didn't want to fund me, dude. They were like, why? You know what I mean? You're going to do this, you know? And so, I look at it now and I can't blame them, bro. Right. But thank God, dude, I was, whether it was persistence or my higher power, which I do believe that had a major part in it, she got me into a program, bro. And so I was able to do, once I released, I was able to go into a 90-day program, bro.
Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah. And see, dude, another one of those fucking moments where, bro, you gotta like, you just gotta give it up, man, because you did all the right things, right? Like, it was like, hey, this isn't going to look good if I don't get into a fucking program right out of here. Right. Like it's just not. And like, I remember, cause I wasn't able to go to rehab. Right. Like I couldn't get in, like my insurance wouldn't cover it. It was super fucked up. And it's weird how, you know, certain people need that type of shit, right? Like some people need to get shipped away for a little bit, right? And you gotta be separated from it. And then some people can just go to the fucking rooms and it's completely circumstantial. It's completely circumstantial. So you get out, you do the rehab stint, and here you are now. Is that what it is now, bro?
Yeah, man. And that's the thing. So I did the 90 days in rehab, and that was the thing too, is that, you know, when I knew if I just get out and I hit the gate, I had nowhere to go, and you have to parole back to where you know, to Placer County, man. And that's my old stomping, right? That's where, you know what I mean? And so nobody really wanted to see me anyways, you know what I mean? But I mean, that's where they would have shipped me back to. And so they sent me to a program in SAC, man. And thank God there was H&I in there too, bro. And the meetings came in, bro. And, I, once again, though, I had no money, bro. I went in there broke. I had nothing, dude. I had the clothes that I went in on. Right. And so they, once I did the 90 day program, man, they put me into sober living. And, I stayed in there for 9 months, bro. And, but the thing is, though, while I was in the program, bro, I got a sponsor, dude, because that's everyone I heard that had a success story was they got a sponsor, they did the steps, they made their amends, they went out and sponsored others, dude, and continue to help God's children, bro. And they stay upon, it's not just a one time all be all thing and you're cured, you know, quote unquote. Yep. It's a daily, right? I get a daily reprieve, right? So it's a daily process, bro. And bro, my life now is something that I can't even, you know, I have my own apartment, bro, and just bought a vehicle today, man, and have a good job, and I'm starting even a better job on Tuesday. I'm a little bit of a career change, man, and my life is nothing. It pales compared to what it used to be. I can't even express it in words, man.
Let's not gloss over this, bro. So here's a real fucking triumph, right? Like here's a real fucking triumph, right? Like, bro, I imagine you got out, like, you know, fucking what? So you got like 3 years now, something like that.
So October 15th will be 3 years.
All right, sweet. Congratulations, bro. So we're fucking almost 3 years, right? And what if you don't feel like sharing this, I'm going to share it for you. So you went and fucking financed a brand new car today. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right, bro.
Yeah, dude. I imagine the credit was completely fucked 2 years ago. Right. And that wasn't an option. Right.
Yeah, no, dude, they wouldn't give me a freaking pillowcase on credit 2 years ago, bro. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. Right. And that's the fucking beauty of it, bro. And congratulations, dude. Like I remember paying off my fucking debt. And getting my credit score up enough and being able to finance that first fucking vehicle, right? And just doing it myself sober.
Right.
It's just so fucking gratifying, bro. So I'm so fucking proud of you, dude. And what you said, another thing I don't want to gloss over is the importance of sponsorship, bro. The importance of sponsors and doing the goddamn steps. People don't want to do those fucking steps, bro. And it's weird that when you see the people who don't are usually the ones that end up going out, right? Like they really do. They're the ones that end up going out, man. If it wasn't for my sponsor, Nick, telling me some of those hard fucking, you know, dick dragging truths that I didn't want to hear. I don't know if we're having this conversation, right? Like, anytime I would try to like burn him or try to like, you know, play my old alcoholic weaselly shit, he'd just be like, quit telling me fuck you, Cameron. Quit telling me fuck you. And I just sit here and be like, what do you mean, Nick? I'm not saying fuck you. Do you mean like, you are, bro? You're saying that my time doesn't matter to you. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? And then I'd be like, God damn, Nick, you're right, bro. All right, I'll see you in 10 minutes, you fucking asshole.
Yeah, dude. No, absolutely, bro. And thank God, bro. Thank God that you have a sponsor like that, because, and that's the thing too, is that, and I sponsor a few men, bro, and I am sponsored. I have a sponsor, right? And I speak to him several times a week. We still get together weekly, bro. And he is an important man in my life, man. He is my guide, dude. He is, you know, because this is the thing is, Cameron, too, is that I didn't know how to be an adult, bro. I didn't know how to be a man, bro. And I'm, you know, I'm 36 years old right now, bro, but I had no idea, man, because I had been living this life that was everything but responsible and good and and honest and The 12 steps has not only got me to face and me realizing my lack of power that I've been searching for this whole time, right? But the men and women in the rooms, bro, have shown me, like, with a lot of love and a lot of grace, like, how to open a bank account, bro. I mean, and that might sound mundane to some people, but if you don't know, you don't know, bro. And I just, I like I said, dude, I was an animal for a long time, man. And so it just, the sponsorship part, and sorry, I don't mean to bounce all around on you, man, but like the sponsorship part, bro, is I didn't want to do them either, bro. I never wanted to do the steps either, because my whole entire life, I'm always just trying to find the easier, softer way to everything, bro. You know what I mean? That it didn't matter. Dude. You know what I mean? It's like, any way, people like, hey, bro, go this way. It's the good way to go, right? And I'm like, yeah, but that way over there looks way better. And it's like, hell no, bro. It's a DPH in the middle of the night, dog. You know what I mean? Like, no, bro, you know? And so it's just, Jesus, man. It's like, but I thank God, bro. I had my sponsor, and shout out to Ryan, bro. Ryan's the best, bro. I love him so much,
shout
man.
Shout out to Ryan, bro.
Right? Ryan C, bro. He's the best, man. And I, you know, he same thing as your sponsor with you, dude. He called bullshit on my stuff, bro, because I come up with all these, you know, and he's in the book, dude. We're doing it quick. Not this whole, he goes, David, you know, you're not the typical like alcoholic brother. You damn, bro. You know what I mean? And so let's, yeah. You know, we're going to get into the book and we're going to get into it now, dude. We're not doing a step a month. We're not doing that, because you might be dead, dude, in a few months if we don't get into this, man. And, yeah. and doing the steps, bro, through him, and him being able and having somebody that could call me on my BS when I try to make up excuses as to why we can't get together, or just lie to his face about certain things, man. And mm-hmm. writing out my fourth step, and him, you know, I remember him sitting down when we sat down to do my fifth step. He goes, okay, so you have everything you want me to see, right? I'm like, yeah. And he goes, so what are you not going to tell me? Right. Yeah. What is that you don't want to tell me, man? Those secrets that you have, bro. And I, you know, stuff happens, bro. When you're in addiction and alcoholism, you do things that you're not proud of, bro, that you're ashamed mm-hmm. of, mm-hmm. things that you don't want anyone else to ever know that you ever did. And that has to come out, bro, because that's what keeps us getting drunk, bro, is when we, all that stuff we're carrying around with us, man.
Preach to that, bro. Preach to that. It's so fucking hard to do. It's so hard to do. But dude, if you do it right, like I assume that you did, I can see it in your face. I know that you did, because your sponsor fucking did it right. Like, dude, it's all gone, right? Like, yeah, it happened, right? Yeah, it happened. But internally, in me mentally, I've let that go now. You know what I mean? Like, that's my process, at least, right? Like, hey, those things that I did, we all know what those things are, right? Like we all know, everybody knows, I made my amends for them, right? Right. You guys can choose to marinate on those if you want, but right. But for me and my personal you know my personal wellness, I've taken accountability for it. You're going to do what you are going to do with it, but I'm done with it, right? That person is dead and gone, man. That person is dead and gone. And if you can do that successfully, dude, you hit it right on the head, man. That saves a lot of people from going out and fucking getting fucking loaded, man. Because if you can sit back, sometimes they creep up on you though, right? Like, I can't sit here and say that I'm immune, right? Like, it does it happen to you? Because I imagine it does, right? Like, sometimes I'll be sitting around and I'll just apologize to my wife, right? Like, I'm so sorry for doing that. And she's like, that was like fucking like, you know, like that was like almost 9 years ago, Cameron. Be like, well, I'm so sorry. She's like, we're way over that. Can we, the kids are fucking crying and the dog's barking. Like, what, I don't care about that. We've already talked about it. And, right. but it still feels gross, right? It still feels gross. So it's like it's a work in progress, man. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, and we absolutely are, you know, and we're not, and that's the whole part that I love about, as outlined in the big book and other programs of recovery, is that, you know, we're not perfect and there is no perfect program, bro. But If you get a sponsor that has a working knowledge of the 12 steps, right? And and I love everyone that maybe shouldn't, but I mean, anyways, that's a whole other like topic, but there's people that you know what I mean? It's like
my man's about to smoke a bunch of fucking people who sponsor people. Be like, man, you guys definitely should not be sponsoring fucking people.
Yeah, bro. I mean, for real though, man. You know, and that's the thing is too is that, bro, if you got to get in the book, man, and you got to find out the solution, because I know for me, man, the solution my whole entire life, my adolescent and adult life, my solution was drugs and alcohol, right? That was my solution to life, man. And I needed to find a better way, man, right? And that's what the 12 steps provided me, was a better way, is because all my attempts at trying to get sober and maintain my, and that's the thing, maintain my sobriety, keep my sobriety, all those attempts failed, man. And everything, I mean, I tried everything from Buddhism to Christian mystic to therapy to incarceration. It didn't matter, dude, all these different ways, you know, like, or, you know, using a socially or something like that, which there is no using socially with me, you know what I mean? And so it's just like, you know what I mean? I end up like,
That's the biggest fucking crock of shit I've ever heard, right? We just have to cut down and we have to do that. Yeah. Fuck, dude, that's fucking awesome, man. I think goddamn, there was something you said that I absolutely loved, and it is now escaping me. It is now escaping me. I've lost it. See, this is my damage. But yeah, dude, like you said, you know, all the other alternatives, right? Like, fuck, dude, Henry went to a Scientology based place, right? Like there's a million different ways. And however, and like I said in the beginning, bro, like, however you're getting it, you're getting it. Like, if you're maintaining your sobriety, hats off to you, bro. Like I don't care how you're doing it, as long as you're not living in anguish anymore, then you know, your tits on a chest in my eyes. But I gotta say, man, what do you, because I got to get to back to school night. So I'm going to hit you with three questions. My man, how's the relationship with the family nowadays, bro? I imagine that's all been resolved. Things are beautiful and things like that, because you're on the straight and narrow for the most part. Or is it still, are you still working, getting the trust back?
Absolutely. You know what? It's a little bit of both, bro. I'll tell you, it is more beautiful than it's ever been in my whole entire life, man. Absolutely, man. Just the trust that has been getting earned back. And, you know, just like my poor mother, man, she could not sleep at night. She just pretty much assumed, dude, that I, you know, she'd be getting a call any day, man, basically, right? That her firstborn is done, dude. And as far as, you know, like, come and pick up his remains kind of thing, because that's the pattern, that's what showed was going to happen, right? And for my own mother, who I'm very close with, and my dad, who I'm very close with now, for them to say that, you know, they are proud of me, man, and that's words I hadn't heard in a long time, man. And just them knowing that I'm okay, and rebuilding that relationship with my siblings, my cousin, everyone in my family, man. It's a very, like you said, it's a very big family we have, man. And so yes, it is. There is still some, though, you know, because things take time too, man. You know, things take time too. And I have been forgiven in the areas of, but you know, people also want to see continuation of what you're doing that works, man. Because, you know, us addicts and alcoholics, man, we could be some sly motherfucker on the line, and you know what I mean? We can, can talk a snake out of its skin, you know what I mean? So it's just like, you know what I'm saying, bro? So, yeah. But yeah, things to answer your question, bro, it's more beautiful than I've ever thought I could even have.
That's fucking awesome, dude. And you hit another great point, man. It just takes that time, right? It just takes that time. Like there's still, I'm not going to air out Ash's laundry, but there's still things that, like, you know, like, I'll do that'll trigger her, right? And she completely trusts me that I'm not going to use or anything like that, but like, random things will happen, right? Like, dude, people don't forget, like we talked about, but all, as long as we're doing what we're supposed to do, all of a sudden, dude, the next time those thoughts pop in their head, they go, oh no, he's good. He's good. And then it's a fleeting thought, right? It's a fleeting thought. Right. I love that everything's coming together for you, bro. And you can see it, man. You can see it, even just the outpour of love, like, you know, coming from the family on your Facebook, right? Like, I saw Justin trying to help you out and shit like that. You know what I mean? And like, you know, everybody just so stoked to see you. You know, when I told my mom that I was going to be sitting down with you, she's fucking excited to hear this episode, brother, man. All I can tell you that. Yeah. Aunt Mary is super juiced. She's excited. She's like, when are you sitting down with David? When are you sitting down with David? I was like, well, fuck, we bounced around, and sitting with him today. So you'll have it on Monday, dude. Mom.
Shout out to Aunt Mary. I love Aunt Mary, dude.
Dude, she kicks ass, love, dude.
Yes. She's the best, bro. She's giving me such shit when I was a little kid, man. But she's the best, bro. She is the best. She doesn't take no BS from nobody. I'll tell you that much right now, yeah, dude.
Good old
As
Aunt
you
Mary.
Well know.
Yeah, it's true, dude. Well, let me finish this off. I could talk to you for about 12 hours, bro. I really do. And I think I'll have to have you back on because I think you got a lot more to share, bro. I think you got a lot more to offer. But I will ask you the first one. What's your favorite part of recovery, David?
I no longer live in fear, bro. I no longer live in fear, man. Fear used to dominate my life, bro. And I was shot through with fear, bro. And I'm literally a free man physically and mentally and spiritually today that I've ever been, bro. And just live in no fear, which means it brings joy and happiness and all these and excitement. And so, yeah, I'm free of the fear, bro.
Good, dude. That was a good fucking answer, dude. No one said that yet, dude. No one said that, but that can't go underestimated, right? Like, dude, especially for people like us, right? Like, yeah. And especially if you were homeless and shit, like, dude, that's wild shit, man. Living on the edge. And then the last one for you, my man, what would you tell somebody who's struggling right this instant?
Oh, Jesus, Cameron, I would tell them right now is that, you know what, first of all, I know what that is, man. And I know how that feels. And I know that desperation and that feeling that there's nothing that's going to work and you're just not going to get it. But I guarantee you, and I can actually guarantee this, that if you reach out and you reach out to the rooms, whichever fellowship you decide to fall into, right, that there is people right now that is willing to literally help you right now and to show you a better way to live and that your life can change. Beyond, it's, I can't even put it into words, but there is actual hope, and do not give up hope.
Yep. That's it, bro. That's it, dude. Right. And it's just getting there and walking through those doors, right? It's just getting there and being vulnerable. And, you know, like I said, I could talk to you for a trillion hours, bro. It's so weird in the beginning, right? Where you just feel like you're different, right? I'm different.
Oh, yeah.
Like there's no way that anybody can help me because of me and my uniqueness. like you know what I mean? like it's fucking crazy, dude. Like you can sit there and then you get, like you said, you get people sitting down with you, like your sponsor should be like, dude, some of the shit my sponsor told me he did. I was like, oh fuck, bro. You know what I mean? Be like, right. Oh, hey, I'm not slick. I'm not the worst person in the world. Right. And those are important things to hear. Those are important things to hear when you got your fucking ass beat. But amen to that, brother. Hey, I want to thank you so much for being so accommodating and fucking getting on here and meeting up with me today. I think there's a lot of really good stuff in this episode that a lot of people are really going to love, especially my mom. I'm super proud of you, bro. And we're going to have to link up sometime soon. Maybe we'll meet up and get some lunch. I'd love to come out and share that meeting. I'm sorry for ghosting you the other day. Now I feel like a fucking complete asshole.
It's all good, bro. You know, things just work out when they work out, brother. And no, it's been a blast being a guest on your show, bro. And I absolutely look forward to potentially doing it again, if possible, man. And, I'm so proud of you too, dude. And thank you for all the love, bro. And who would have thought, man, as little kids running around shooting shit with BB guns, that we'd be here today on a podcast.
Sitting here talking about fucking being sober, right? And, it's cool, man. We're breaking that curse one day at a time, man. And that's all we can do, bro. So give your family my best. Tell them that I love them. I haven't seen them in a while. And I'd love to have you maybe come around for one of these little family events. When we get something set up, we'll have you come down. All right.
Yes, absolutely, man. All right, I love you, bro.
I love you, David. Hey, go stare at your brand new whip, dog.
Hey, yeah, dog, I'm gonna go arm roll that shit right now, dog.
Yeah, dude. Give it a kiss or something, dude. Congratulations, David. Yeah, I love you, brother.
Love you too. Talk to you soon, man.
Later, dude. Bye. Man, that is just a heartwarming fucking story, man. It just is. And, you know, you could sit back and you can listen to that and be like, well, of course it is, Cameron. You know, that's a family member. David and I are the same age. We're literally like 2 weeks apart. So, yeah, you could listen to that and be like, of course. Yeah, you know, that's fantastic. But when I tell you this, he was fucked off when I saw him last. He was fucked off. I honestly, and David, you'll re-listen to this and he knows, I didn't think he was going to make it. I didn't think he was going to make it. Like, and this is a guy that I, you know, used to go and, you know, try to get more Easter eggs than he did at, you know, our massive family Easter egg hunts and Easter and see him in family events my whole life. And, you know, I sit here and I looked at him and it's just like, dude, I don't know if I'm ever going to see him again. But lo and behold, as fate has it, and as we like to say, higher power, whatever you guys believe in, God, he had a different plan. And thank God for it, because he's a bright, vibrant soul, who's out in the streets, getting after it, helping people, sponsoring people, secretarying meetings. And what a fucking beautiful story of, you know, going in and you know, his car blows up. He posted something on Facebook the other day, you know, hey, does anybody know a Ford mechanic? And you know, lo and behold, we didn't get into this, but I assume that the diagnosis was not elite. So we had to figure something out. Well, guess what, man? Now that he's going on 3 years, he sat there and he built his fucking credit up and he just financed a new car. And he's financed himself a new car. And if you're in the recovery fucking world, you know how big of an achievement that is, right? You know, we're talking about a guy who was sitting there crying in his tent, wanting to die because he can't find a fucking vein. And he's sitting there miserable. I mean, just terrible shit. And now he's sitting here on a fucking call with me on StreamYard, smiling, vibrant, full of fucking life, turning his life around and financing new vehicles. You know what I mean? Like learning how to live and live in it. And that's just what it's all about. Like Hen and I like to say, this is that shit that we're talking about. This is that shit. It really is. And he really did highlight a really good point multiple times on there. But dude, if you aren't doing the steps, if you're in recovery and you just go in the rooms and you haven't finished those, or you haven't seen them, or you haven't called your sponsor in a while, why don't you hit them up? And why don't you pick up the book and get through those steps, man? Go get through them. Just clean that shit out, be done with it, and move on and move forward how we're supposed to. I can tell you it works. I can promise you. But man, yeah, I could have talked with him for a trillion, trillion, trillion hours. And I think I'm going to probably have to have him back too. I know we always say this at the end of every episode. Yeah, I'm going to have him back. I'm going to have to have you back. But I think he needs to come back, man, because he's full of gems. And now I feel, like I said, like a humongous asshole. Because he asked me to come chair a meeting, and as the family man that I am, I got lost in the sauce of being a 36-year-old man with two kids and forgot to respond, and now I feel like a huge dickhead. So I'm going to have to go out there and return the favor for coming on this show and being an upstanding man, a citizen, and an overall great human being. And with that, I will finish this. Hen is playing playoff softball. So hopefully he's hitting jacks and they're winning the game. And I know that we have another guest next week, like we talked about. So that'll be exciting. If you haven't followed us, give us a follow on Spotify, Apple, whatever platform you're listening on. A share to anybody would be great. Like, hey, David, share this episode, brother. Send it out to everybody. Everybody, if you're listening to this because David shared it with you, welcome to the Rude Dude Podcast. This is what we do here. We keep it fucking real, and we like to talk about all things recovery, and we like to get after it. So welcome, welcome, welcome. We're all welcome here. So come here and listen to stories about crazy shit and have a laugh or two. But I have to get to back to school night, so I got to get the fuck up out of here, man. I will finish this like I always do. I love you, Hen, very much. And I'm excited to do an interview with you next week. And Hen would say, I love you too, Cam. And be yourself and fuck what they think. And I go, be like my cousin David and do the steps, sponsor people, and get after it. Later, dude. I'm losing my mind, bro. I'm losing my mind.